Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson, who is literally fresh off the plane from Belize.
Yeah, I'm not sure fresh is quite the right word. It's quite a long way to go for 3 days, but totally worth it. I think I spoke a bit about it before heading out, but most people, I think when they think of Belize, they think of the Blue Hole, because that's kind of what captures a lot of the headlines and it's what you see from a lot of the imagery. But this trip was actually focused kind of further south, because country has a nearly 200 nautical miles of barrier reef. So you can imagine the diving opportunities that are out there. But yeah, brilliant few days. Went to a private island for a day. Tough gig working for Boat International. But it gave a really good taste of, yeah, the kind of cruising that you could have there, because there's just all these little islands dotted down the coastline that you could kind of anchor off and go and enjoy for the day. And then also headed further south to an area called Punta Gorda, which the tourist board have kind of highlighted as an area that they want to develop specifically for the superyacht industry. I think what's amazing there is you just go a few miles inland and you're in kind of proper jungle, to the point where we saw a pretty sizable boa constrictor. I'm not completely comfortable with snakes, I have to admit. The guide was a lot more comfortable than I was. He took my phone and went straight in to take all the photos, and I stood a kind of sensible distance back.
Boa constrictors aren't poison. They're not poisonous, right? They're just...
I don't think you'd want them to have a nibble.
No.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think it would be a comfortable experience if they had a nibble, but no, I think they...
Not a great way to go, being squeezed to death by a boa constrictor.
No, I mean, he wasn't the biggest. I would have... I don't know. I would have probably backed myself.
Could it have taken down a cat?
Yeah, I definitely would have had a cat. And actually, that was something else that came up. They have jaguars out there as well. And apparently, jaguars particularly like dogs. So lots of expats move out there with kind of nice sort of cocker spaniels and find that go disappearing in the night. So there, yeah.
So the cat gets taken by the boa, yeah. The dog gets taken by the jaguar.
Yeah, absolutely. But aside from the dangers, it's obviously incredibly beautiful. And it also, something else it has out there, is a very strong and proud Mayan heritage. So it has the highest concentration of Maya sites along all the Central American countries. So we visited a site called Lemane, which I'm probably butchering the pronunciation as usual. And that was thought to have first been settled in 800 BC, and it then wasn't abandoned till the 1600s. And it's a huge site, stretches over 400 hectares. And what was pretty amazing was we had it completely to ourselves, mainly probably because you have to go down a kind of dirt track for a good half an hour to get there. But yeah, I mean, so many of those, you know, things like that I've been to before, you're kind of fighting through crowds and it's all roped off and everything else, but you could just kind of wander around. And are you an Indiana Jones fan, Stuart?
I love Indiana Jones. It's, yeah, anything, well, Han Solo, Harrison Ford, anything Harrison Ford, you can do no wrong, that man. And obviously Indiana Jones, he was a legend in all of those movies. That was one of our lockdown treats, actually. I introduced all the kids to the Indiana Jones series, and it was just a ridiculous excuse for me to watch them again. Loved it. Love them.
Well, there's Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, and this site is actually where the Crystal Skull is rumoured to have first been found.
Actually, in the Indiana Jones canon, that is the one work that I'm not a fan of. The first three movies, amazing. This Crystal Skull movie is awful.
Well, I'm sorry to bring it up. I mean, actually, apparently in the movie, I think he's in Peru. So Indiana Jones is also very lost, given that it apparently was found in Belize. But there we go.
They're making a new one. Did you know?
No, I didn't know that.
I'm quite excited about it.
We'll look forward to the impressions.
Hopefully, yeah.
Anyway, I will be heading back in April with a group from the charter industry to hopefully give them a kind of similar taste of what the destination has to offer.
You've really excited me about this Indiana Jones link. I know nothing about Belize. I know there's lots of Mayan ruins there. That's literally the extent of my knowledge. I know Lord Ashcroft has had a long association with Belize, and he's written a number of articles for us over the years about his amazing cruising. But that's all I've got on Belize.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very similar. Claire, who I was traveling with, spent time in Costa Rica, and I think there's a lot of kind of similarities between the two. And actually, I was speaking to the general manager of one of the hotels, and he basically said Costa Rica has surfing and a volcano, and we have Mayan ruins and diving. So that's your choice between the two, essentially. But yeah, it's a beautiful place, and yeah, lovely people, and looking forward to having the excuse to go back in just a few months' time.
You mentioned Costa Rica, actually. So another Lord Laidlaw, at the Explore Yacht Summit last year, I asked him what were his favorite and least favorite destinations or the places he's been over the years. And actually, because I always thought Costa Rica was, well, it's the rich coast, isn't it? I think that's what it means.
Yeah.
I'm going to hastily Google that. But I'd always been led to believe it was a sensational place to cruise. But he actually said it was quite a disappointing place to cruise.
Gosh.
Yeah. He doesn't.
Well, there you go. I shouldn't be selling Belize while Costa Rica then.
Doesn't pull his punches. But I mean, I'm sure lots of people have been there and had a fantastic time too. But yeah, Belize. I think that'd be great. So when's that trip happening again?
April.
April.
Just after Easter.
Okay. So you'll be gathering a collection of super yacht charter brokers.
Charter brokers and managers, yeah, to kind of come and see it for themselves. And yeah, Belize are really keen. You know, it's a big focus area for their government to try and attract more yachts and yachting down there. So hopefully they'll kind of be a big part in building their strategy and moving it forwards, because it is a long way behind, you know, a lot of other countries. And it, given that it's on the Caribbean Sea, it's obviously got a lot of competition from, you know, all your traditional Caribbean destinations. But hopefully we can put it on the map for some adventurous owners and charterers that are looking to try something a bit different.
I think that the archaeological, cultural aspect of it will draw a lot of attention. I mean, where else can you access so many Mayan ruins in such a small place? I think that is that's going to be a huge appeal to lots of people, especially, you know, everyone's desperate for new experiences in the superyacht sector, aren't they? And we'll get onto that a bit later. But I think that's going to appeal to an awful lot of people. And the fact that it's underdeveloped as well. I think that's...
Yeah, there's something very raw about it. I mean, there's obviously a big American tourist market because the flight down from Miami is about 2 hours. And they have I think they have direct flights from 5 US cities. But I mean, certainly on the yachting side and the marine side, it's completely undeveloped. I mean, you're not going to see another super yacht for days. We met with people called Sailing Yachts Belize, and they're slightly on the smaller side, kind of they go up to about 55 foot. But yeah, they say they go out for days and don't see anyone else. And they're, you know, diving these incredible sites. There's no one else there. It's a pretty cool opportunity if you're looking for something, as you say, a little bit different.
Yeah.
But without going through, you know, the huge, we talk a lot about the South Pacific, but it's kind of getting a bit of that wildness and experience, but without having to, you know, completely relocate your yacht across the other side of the world for a year or 2 years.
Yeah. I'm excited about that. I'd be keen to...
To come?
Obviously. But we'll generate lots of media out of that, won't we? Video and photos and social media and stuff. It'd be great to see all that. Some housekeeping quickly. SDF now 3 weeks away.
2 weeks tomorrow.
Okay, 2 weeks away, SDF. Tickets still available, although not many, actually. We had an update yesterday. Tickets are selling incredibly well, but there are a few left. So that's the Super Yacht Design Festival happening in Cortina from the 8th to the 10th of February. Had some great news yesterday about a couple of speakers. I just want to have one or two more conversations to absolutely 110% nail them down. And I can tell you all about that in a future podcast. But some really, really, really exciting and fascinating people coming. So that's great.
Have you got your Alpine Chic planned for the social side?
Is that what even is that? I mean, I just wear the same thing every time. I don't.
I mean, every day.
Yeah, basically. Alpine Chic. I just despair at dress codes, honestly. It's exhausting. Let me quickly mention Between the Bays again. So that's 9th to the 12th of March, happening between Anguilla and St. Martin. Boat International's first on-water event for some time. It's going to be a four-day rendezvous. It's going to be fantastic. We're working with Belmond, who you'll obviously know is a sensational... luxury hotel group. They have these amazing properties on both those islands, and we'll be shuttling between the two and having some great events and dinners and parties and barbecues and all sorts of good stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that's going to be great. The last piece of housekeeping.
It's the most exciting.
The most exciting. Actually, we probably should have led the podcast with this news. Our colleague Charlotte, who you'll know as a regular podcast presenter, recently went on maternity leave. She has just given birth to a beautiful baby girl called Lily. So, Charlotte, if you're listening.
Congratulations. Charlotte and Tim.
And Tim, yep. Another member of the boat family.
Yeah. They're racking up.
Yeah. We've got quite a brood now, haven't we?
Super yacht, building our own super yacht crew.
Yeah. So huge congratulations to Charlotte, Tim, and welcome to the world, Lily. So the first big thing I wanted to talk about this week was the Royal Yacht. You're not allowed to say Royal Yacht, are you? The national flagship. In fact, it's you mentioned Royal Yacht to some people and they're quick to shoot back. It is absolutely not a Royal Yacht. Well, it's not even a yacht.
It's not,
anymore,
yes. It? Yeah, I mean,
so basically, Vitruvius, Philip Brion's yacht design studio, has been the first to break cover with some significant details about their confidential design, or previously confidential design, for the national flagship. So as a reminder for everyone, this was the scheme announced in May 2021 by then Prime Minister Boris Johnson for a new national flagship, which Defence Minister Ben Wallace said would be the jewel in the crown of the government's new shipbuilding strategy. It was not, I need to stress once again, going to be a replacement for HMS Britannia, which was decommissioned in 1997, famously prompting the Queen to shed a rare public tear. So this new national flagship would be a floating embassy, effectively, driving trade and investment in the UK and be an events platform. So it would float around the world, waving the flag, inviting VIPs on trade shows and nice events for bigwigs in various places, and basically convincing everyone that the UK is a great place to visit and invest in. The brief from the MOD, because it was a defence project first and foremost, which is why it got around these World Trade Organization rules about a project of this scale being put out to international tender, because it was a defence project, it means it could be a purely British product. So the brief was cabin space for 36 passengers, 52 Royal Navy crew, and be able to take 256 guests on short voyages. So we couldn't have done the World Super Yacht Awards on it, sadly.
Disappointing.
The whole thing was scrapped in November last year as the government reasoned, I guess, that spending 250 million quid on a project like this would play pretty badly in the press, given the cost of living crisis, the NHS meltdown we're experiencing, Ukraine and all the other signs of the coming apocalypse. Actually, perhaps in the event of apocalypse, a very capable ship like this, probably not a bad idea. But a number of very, very pedigreed UK studios formed consortia to bid for the design of it. And the two finalists were actually something called Team Signal. And the members of that team were Bannenberg and Rail Design, Fraser Nash Consultancy on the technical and security side, and Glass Engineering was by Eckersley O'Callaghan. The other finalist was Team Harland and Wolff, and Harland and Wolff famously, obviously, the builder of the Titanic. They led this consortium, the consultant Stephen Payne, naval architecture and technical oversight by Foreship, interior design by SMC Design, and exterior by Clifford Den Design, who you'll know is a very capable super yacht designer who has worked with Heesen quite a lot. So those were the two down into the in the final two. And we've only recently been, details about the flagship and the design have been kind of leaking out over the last couple of weeks as everyone has been released by their various NDAs and the Official Secrets Act and things like that. And we're actually working on a mega feature that's going in the April issue, I think, featuring many more details about these two finalists and a few other of the designs that almost made it through to the final. But it's really exciting to see some of them.
Yeah, I hadn't appreciated how far the designs had got, because we obviously, there was all this talk about the national flagship and we covered it, but it kind of always seemed so fanciful. I hadn't appreciated, yeah, to what extent these designs had got to.
Yeah, I felt exactly the same. When it was first announced, I thought, there's no way. This is madness. This is going to just be absolutely pilloried in the press. The idea that Boris Johnson, who was historically unpopular at the time, was going to try and squeeze through a £250 million national flagship. But you know, there's lots of great reasons for it. I mean, you talk to people who, whilst it wasn't a royal yacht, well, this wasn't going to be a royal yacht when Britannia was floating around the world. You talk to people with a lot of knowledge of the good work the boat did, people would line up to get invites to various functions and soirees and what have you on that boat. And as a soft power platform, it was very, very effective.
There's a statistic somewhere which says how much money effectively Royal Britannia was meant to have generated for the British government. And it's really impressive. I'll have to dig it out somewhere.
Yeah, let's dig that out, because that'd be really interesting actually to put into the feature as well. So proponents obviously said this is a great way, like, to fly the flag. Aren't we great? We can build this lovely green, sustainably focused boat. It's going to be huge and take lots of people and throw functions, et cetera, float around the world, generating investment in the UK. Obviously, opponents said it was an enormous waste of money and extravagant at a time when there's a cost of living crisis, incomes are being squeezed, inflation's out of control, et cetera, et cetera. The good news for us, I suppose, is that we can talk about these designs sooner rather than later, because the project was scrapped. But the first one we can talk at length about is the Vitruvius one, which was their consortium was called Festive Owl. And the owl at the end upcapped because it was all about the construction material. It was going to be all in aluminium. And so their consortium consisted of, obviously, Vitruvius for the design, builder Osea, interior design by Zaha Hadid, and lighting specialist Jason Bruce Studio was involved as well. So their project was 125 meters long with a lovely royal blue hull and a deep focus on sustainability. The team said the boat would be built with a highly efficient hull that claims to provide 30% less drag than conventional vessels. And Briand, as we know, is a genius of hull design as well as other aspects of design. So I can completely believe that claim. The interior, meanwhile, by Zaha Hadid Architects, would be use repurposed materials and would feature a flexible layout that allows the yacht to function as both an exhibition space or a floating embassy that can host state dinners and private receptions with amenities suitable for all demographics. An energy agnostic propulsion system would have been based on a highly efficient pod drive setup, enabling geostationary position keeping without damaging sensitive seabeds. With a conventional anchor, which is obviously increasingly common on larger superyachts. DP keeps you in place with the use of thrusters and pods and things like that, so no need to drop the hook. Power for the drives would have been derived from a battery bank, able to be charged via shore power or onboard generators, fueled by biofuel, with the capacity to use alternative energy sources in future. So really future-proofing the drive setup, the propulsion setup of the boat. So Briand said, to design a vessel that will become a benchmark in sustainability as well as demonstrating British excellence and heritage for current and future generations, while also being a symbol of inclusion and diversity, was an enormous challenge. The nature and intensity of the project kept me focused, but also filled me with pride. He's designed a great looking boat. So it's really great that we can publish those renderings on the website and reveal a few more details.
Do we know whether other designers were approached and declined to take part?
There was lots of chat a few Monacos ago about people submitting bids. But I think the point you made was that the process required really a huge amount, massive time investment on the part of these various companies. They spent hundreds and hundreds of hours designing these boats because the spec had to be ready to build, basically. The very brief spec I mentioned earlier was obviously just a few highlights.
Yeah.
The briefing document was considerable. It had to consider security and green initiatives and all that kind of stuff. So the fact that these studios went so deep in the process meant that they invested huge amounts of time in developing their project. So in that way, it's a huge shame that it's not going to happen, because actually it would have been a massively forward-thinking project, and the boat that would have resulted would have really, really broken through a few technical frontiers and innovation frontiers that would have obviously trickled down to the rest of commercial and maritime and leisure marine industries. So if you want to see what Philip Briand and his consortium came up with, have a look on the website now. We'll obviously put a link in the description. But otherwise, do not miss the April issue, because that will have loads more detail about some of the other bids as well. Yeah, and congrats, obviously, to the guys from our industry that got down to the final. So Bannenberg and Raoul, and Clifford Den on the other side with Harland and Wolf. I think it's, yeah, some brilliant projects. Hopefully, some of the things they come up with and the innovations will see the light of day. Fingers crossed on projects in future. So we should probably mention also some pretty significant news that broke just the other day. I think you were on your way back, weren't you?
Yes, it was kind of Friday early evening, American time, which actually worked quite well because I had a layover in the airport. Never before been grateful to be on the 11:30 flight back from Miami. But this was the news that the United States Department of Justice had charged British national Richard Masters and Russian national Vladislav Osipov with facilitating a sanctions evasion and money laundering scheme in relation to the ownership and operation of 77.7 meter Tango. So the yacht was seized in April last year, but the sanctions had actually been in place against the owner, Russian businessman Viktor Vesselberg, by the United States back in April 2018. The defendants have been charged with conspiracy to defraud the United States and to commit offences against the United States, violating the International Emergency Economic Powers Act and money laundering. The Department of Justice did also make clear in this statement that the indictment is, of course, merely an allegation and all defendants are presumed innocent until proven guilty beyond reasonable doubt in a court of law. It's understood that Masters, who runs Master Yacht, a yacht management company based in Parma, was arrested by the Spanish Civil Guard on Friday, the 20th of January, and it's been requested that he's extradited to the United States to face charges. The arrest warrant against Osipov is still outstanding at the time of recording this podcast. Masters' company is reported to have taken over management of the yacht in April 2018 and is accused of conspiring with others to evade the American sanctions. As part of this, Masters is alleged to have devised a scheme to use a false name for the yacht, the Fanta. The indictment also claims that Osipov and Masters advised and enabled Tango employees to continue to do business with numerous US companies and therefore allowed it to continue to operate as a luxury vessel. It's clearly a story that will have kind of ramifications across the industry, and it'll be interesting to see how it continues.
Like you said, yeah, the story is obviously still developing. It's still very fresh. No comment yet or statement from Master Yachts, a very well-known company in our industry, and as is Richard Masters, frankly. The times I've met him, he's always been thoroughly pleasant and delightful, and a great guy to talk to. Just to reiterate, this indictment is merely an allegation. All defendants are presumed innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law. So when we have more information, we'll bring it to you. But at the moment, yeah. Pretty shocking news to hit land on the desk at, what is it, Sunday night or Monday morning? When was it? It was
Friday night.
Friday night, yeah.
Well, Friday night. Well, I saw it Friday evening US time. So yeah, middle of the night for you.
Middle of the night, yeah.
It's rare that I WhatsApp you in the middle of the night, but this is one of those cases.
Something like that it's worth a midnight WhatsApp, I think. So let's talk about the Düsseldorf Boat Show as well, because that is obviously ongoing at the minute. We've got a pretty big team over in Düsseldorf. Holly, our online editor, has been furiously filing stories and running around Düsseldorf. And if you've been to the Düsseldorf Boat Show, you'll know it's vast. So you really do your steps running around that place. A few stories I just wanted to signal or highlight, ending on one that I really love. So...
No bias at all.
No British bias. So Pardo Yachts has introduced a new E72, which looks pretty cool. The whole cockpit of the model kind of opens up to create this kind of huge on-water terrace. The hull shape is also interesting. It's got a warped bottom, according to Pardo, which creates a high dead rise angle that ensures hydrodynamic efficiency when planing in rough seas. Planing in rough seas, it's the holy grail. The center of gravity is located forward, which works to reduce the amount of energy that dissipates when the yacht is cruising in displacement mode as well. According to the yard, these characteristics also give it the power to overcome the transition phase between displacement and planing modes. So, yeah, interesting sounding hull. Be imagine, well, that's the boat, the kind of boat that will be at Cannes offering sea trials. So, yeah, we'll try and get someone on board and report back because that does sound interesting. Pearl Yachts, meanwhile, has announced the new 82. The first unit has already been sold and construction is underway with delivery set for 2024. The design duo of Bill Dixon and Kelly Hoppen have teamed up again on this model. It's a really sharp-looking boat, as you'd expect from Pearl. Of the monochrome interior, Hoppen said, "We've used beautiful materials and the joinery and the detailing are absolutely intricate. But the feel of when you're on board is quite open plan with these wonderfully enlarged windows, which make you feel that you are really out at sea rather than being enclosed inside of a yacht."
Has Hoppen ever spoken at one of our events?
No.
We did a feature in the magazine at one stage.
We should get her along to the SDF, actually, because she'd be a fantastic speaker.
She's very interesting, kind of cross, you know, bridging that CPO and,
yeah, absolutely.
And design world. Yeah,
very well known as well. But my favourite, no hiding, and that's the unveiling of the new Sunseeker Superhawk 55, the first new Superhawk model for more than a decade. I was really excited to see this. I'd seen a few renderings and things like that, but it's always great to see it in the flesh. The model was unveiled with great flair by Sunseeker as a huge Union flag was gently pulled off it in the hall at Dusseldorf. Great showmanship there from Sunseeker. They know what they're doing with that kind of thing. Very dramatic. It's a great looking boat. And obviously the Superhawk model itself is pretty iconic given its history and association with the Bond franchise. It's the first Sunseeker, interestingly, printed with 3D parts. And interest is through the roof. They've already taken 52 orders, according to Andrea Frabetti, the CEO. So they've got another stone cold hit on their hands there, Sunseeker. 38 knot top speed from the twin IPS 950 pod drives. You can have an open top or a hard top version. You're going to pay around 1.4 million, excluding VAT, starting. So it's not cheap, but it looks awesome. And with 52 sold already.
Yeah, they're doing something right. Oh,
that's amazing. So good on you, Sunseeker. Brilliant looking boat. Very, very cool unveiling. And I've already tasked some of the team with getting a ride as soon as humanly possible, because that would be a very, very cool one to feature in one of our wild waters in the magazine and also online. Right. Should we talk headlines?
Yeah, so to start with, Rolls-Royce has reported successful results from its first trials of a 12-cylinder gas variant of an MTU engine running on 100% hydrogen. The Power Systems business unit reported promising findings from across all categories, including efficiency, performance, emissions, and combustions. The technology has not yet been applied to vessels, but Rolls-Royce hopes that successful testing is the first step towards a widespread rollout. The company has also confirmed that modifications can be made to existing engines to create conversion solutions. Dr. Jörg Stratmann, CEO of Rolls-Royce Power Systems, said, "We see hydrogen as one of the central elements of energy transition. It can be used both for storage of excess energy and as a fuel, not only for engines, but for fuel cells and cogeneration plants to generate climate-neutral electricity and heat."
Big news from Rolls-Royce. 100% hydrogen engines, an MTU, a variant of an MTU engine running on 100% hydrogen. So this is kind of another tick in the hydrogen box, really, isn't it? A big one. And we'll be talking more about hydrogen and future fuels. We've got some good sessions coming up at the SDF. We've got Lursen talking about what they're doing with fuel cells. We've got FedShip talking about a project they're working on. And we've also got another innovator in the green fuel space. They're going to do big, kind of short, sharp, punchy presentations at the SDF about their amazing developments, and this is another one. So we'll have to get Rolls-Royce in for 2024 because this is an exciting development.
Yeah, it sounds like a big step forwards. I'm not the hydrogen expert, Cecile is, but it sounds like a really positive step.
Yeah. Next up, we have the news that Italian shipyard San Lorenzo has christened the first unit of its 57 steel series. Named Alma, the yacht hit the water for the first time in November 2022, but was officially named this week at the shipyard in La Spezia. The 57 steel follows the success of the 52 steel and the 62 steel models, offering a middle option between the two. Key differences include a revised layout that places a larger owner's cabin on the upper deck forward, where the wheelhouse would typically be found. The yacht's exterior design is by Bernardo Zucon and the team at Zucon International Project, while her interiors are the work of British design studio Vickers. Bernardo Zucon called the project an ambitious undertaking with the aim to create a craft of around 1,050 gross tons with functional and lifestyle contents that are normally found on boats of larger sizes. Another plug for Superyacht Design Festival here.
Yeah.
Ferruccio Rossi from the Superyacht Division at San Lorenzo will be on stage with you, Sophia.
He will, yeah. So he's part of my all-star Italian panel at SDF, which is going to be looking at how we're changing the use of space on board. So actually, this series sounds like a fantastic example of how they're creating maximum GT and then how they're also dividing that. There's a big move towards less formal spaces, more multifunctional spaces, and also that constant way of trying to blend the inside with the outside. So yeah, Ferruccio has some interesting ideas on all of the above.
Multi-generational, multifunctional spaces. Yeah.
Bang it's on the future.
Trend. It is the future. I'm gonna do the last story.
Okay.
Because it's catamaran corner time.
Oh yeah, sorry. Obviously. Why is he doing the last story? Be my guest.
Polish shipyard Sunreef has signed an order for the second Sunreef 43-metre eco model. The deal was secured by Ben Ritchie at Wyco less than 2 months after the sale of the first hull was announced. The 43-metre eco is the newest addition to the shipyard's eco fleet and was first revealed in January 2022. Billed as the ultimate eco sailing cat, the 43-metre model will be one of the largest composite sailing structures on the water with integrated solar panels that can produce approximately 250 kilowatt hours in a 24-hour period. Solar panels are built into the sides of the hull, the superstructure and the bimini. The Sunreef 43-metre eco can fly 1,600 square metres of sail downwind off its 49-metre mast. It's also fitted with state-of-the-art electric engines that offer up to 12 hours of e-motoring, according to the shipyard. Richie, the broker from Wyco, said the Sunreef 43-metre eco is an exciting project offering an amazing opportunity for quality time on the water thanks to her great onboard spaces and huge volume. The upgraded electric power not only facilitates more responsible, efficient cruising, but it is totally silent, enhancing the already impressive comfort on board. Comfort, volume, efficiency, tick, 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 catamarans.
It is great to see Sunreef increasingly moving into this larger space. I mean, 43 metres is a...
chunky catamaran. Yeah. That's a big, big unit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Because how about the hemisphere is...
She's around 43.
Yeah.
So the biggest one in the world is currently... is Art Explorer, which is... we've interviewed Frederick Jusse, obviously in the magazine previously. He's building that over in Italy. And that's going to be, at the moment, the biggest... I think there are plans to go bigger, but I don't think they're not nearly as advanced, obviously, as Art Explorer. That's a beautiful looking boat. That's going to be amazing when that hits the water. we're dedicating a whole podcast to that one.
A podcast, whole issue.
We are doing a cat special coming up. So Caroline's busy working on that. More on that to come. All right, data. Let's talk data. As ever, brought to you by Boat Pro. The super industry's leading and award-winning market intelligence service. This is based on a story that went on Boat Pro News this week. It's about Explorer Yacht numbers reaching a record high, which we've touched on previously, but a bit more detail, Sophia.
So we did actually announce this during the Explorer Yacht Summit back in November as a sort of sneak preview. But basically, it's that the number of Explorer yachts on order or in build has reached an all-time high, according to the 2023 Global Order Book. So the official tally entering 2023 sits at 88 ongoing projects, which is three more hulls than was recorded at the same time the year before. And that was a record in its own right. So it's surpassed last year's record.
It is a new record, I should point out. But it's not quite, the growth isn't quite as dramatic. So the growth wasn't as dramatic between... The growth is much more dramatic in Explorer Yacht hulls between 2021 and 2022. Between 2022 and 2023, growth wasn't so dramatic. It is a new record.
Yeah, but it's less. Percentage growth is smaller.
Smaller. So we'll just, whether that's anomalous or not, we'll find out, obviously, as we gather more data and next year's Global Order is published. But, you know, the headline is, it is a new record high.
So at the moment, the Explorer yacht fleet currently comprises of 740 vessels, which equates to about 6% of the total global fleet. We would expect this number to increase with more than 200 new deliveries on course for the next decade. And there were, just as a point of reference, there are 182 Explorer yachts delivered between 2010 and 2019. I think we can probably quite comfortably predict that this next decade will surpass that. Obviously, we talk about Explorer yachts a lot, but we do tend to focus on the bigger vessels. But what's actually interesting is that the biggest success is being seen with shipyards with smaller builds. So 70% of all Explorer yachts actually fall within the 24 to 40 meter range. So the top three shipyards all specialize in this smaller range, with CDM leading the way, having delivered 25 Explorer vessels since its inception in 2010, followed by 20 deliveries from Nordhavn and an additional 16 from Brazilian shipyard Inace. So what's driving this demand? Stuart, you had a little read of some of the quotes in the piece.
Yeah, well, it's always interesting to hear from the people actually making these shipyards and talking to the clients. But it's interesting that point about the smaller Explorer yachts driving the growth of the sector, and that chimes with the general finding of the global order book this year, that there's more and more semi-custom is becoming ever more a bigger proportion of the total order book. I think it's the biggest, it represents more of the order book than ever before. Full custom boats are obviously, will all, you know, no one's ever going to stop building full custom boats, but increasingly shorter delivery times, semi-custom models are what the market is demanding. And that's absolutely where these yards are, Nordhavn and Arche and CDM, obviously. So you don't need to build an enormous custom 150-meter Explorer if you want to go see the world. You know, there's some very capable yards operating in smaller segments, offering similar kind of autonomy. So CDM's CEO, Vasco Pompentieri, said the main driver of this trend is the fact that yacht owners do not want their experiences to be limited. Being able to reach the 15 best surf or diving spots worldwide from your own yacht, or its generously dimensioned tender, celebrating the new year with the chief of the Kiribati Islands, these are experiences that you will never have if you own a traditional 35 to 40 meter luxury yacht, according to Vasco. Darman's Enrico Tintori, meanwhile, said there is, let's say, a clear transfer of wealth happening from one generation to another. You can see how, with all the startups, there are all these young entrepreneurs who have been very successful that are now younger than the average billionaire of the past decade. Due to their varied interests, this emerging superyacht clientele is more interested on having an added sense of exploration or different, slightly less mainstream experiences in their boat. So experience is key. Younger people driving this trend.
I think there'd be an interesting feature, and I'm sure you could do it with Boat Pro, but it might be quite time consuming, in how far these Explorer vessels are traveling. So how many of them are exploring and how many of them are actually in the more traditional spots. But yeah.
That's a great piece of analysis. We'll get Gabby on that.
Bad news, Gabby.
Bad news, Gabby. Big job coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
I hope you've enjoyed this week. That's it. Thank you, Sophia.
Pleasure, as always.
This episode was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen. It's a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Hope you have a fantastic week. See you next time.